Thanks, Nick. James Lee, alcoholic.
James.
Sobriety day, January 3rd, 1984. I love those countdowns, so welcome everybody who had a year or less. Well, welcome everybody. I got 15 minutes, and I was asked earlier today to do this, so I didn't have a lot of preparation time. And I had an idea pop in my head, and I asked Dick, I said, what do you think of this? And he was like, yeah. And then I went to my wife, and I said, what do you think of this idea? And she's like, I got a better idea, so I'm going with my wife's suggestion. So here goes. Happy wife. Happy life. Alright. That's my wisdom, right there. Now by the way, I don't consider myself very wise, so being up here is really a weird thing, but, she suggested I tell you the story of my son Ryan, so I'm gonna tell this story. Some of y'all may have heard it, so my apologies up front, but, I'm gonna get to that. She's directing me over here. So just make sure I say that before I'm done. All right. I was thinking about this story, and, you know, I've been sober a while, and getting sober doesn't mean that life stops being in session. And flashback to 1983. I'm 9 years sober. I got life by the short hairs, as it were. Everything's going great. I'm married, pregnant wife, baby due. May 23rd rolls around. Out comes Ryan. And I remember my friends were saying to me, you want a boy, you want a girl? And I said, I don't care as long as it's a healthy baby. That's what I want. Out comes Ryan. He was the most beautiful baby you'd ever set your eyes. Am I right? He was an angel. He was so cute, my mom gave him the nickname Critter. Remember that? And everything was perfect. And I was like, my prayers were answered. Everything is happening according to my plan. And then started to realize something about my son, that there was something wrong with him. And went to the doctor when Ryan was about a year old, and we learned that Ryan was profoundly deaf. Now, what I'm about to share with you is a result of my ignorance. Okay? You hear that? My ignorance. And here's what my ignorance said. My son's life is gonna be small. My son's life is gonna be hard. This is not what I had in mind. And then I had this thought, and this was perhaps my first thought, and I'm ashamed to tell you that this was my thought, but here it comes. My thought was, God, why are you doing this to me? And I had that thought because I'm an alcoholic and I'm selfish and self-centered. That's how I respond to life. When life happens, I see it from my perspective, and God, why are you doing this to me? And I remember I was very angry, and I would share with whoever would listen, why is this happening to me? And I talked to my sponsor, who at the time was Frank Honeycutt, and Frank would listen to me, and then I basically got to the point where I just shared, and he said, okay, now let's get to work. And we started going through doing the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I also got to work with some other life things, like learning to sign and getting services to my kid and making sure that he's getting what his needs met. And the focus, thanks to Frank and others in AA, the focus became less about me and more about my son, which is the way it should have been originally. And I wish that had been my response, but it wasn't. But anyway, I had this idea in my head. Here was my idea. My son's life is small. My life is going to be smaller. It's going to be really hard. He's going to, have this life that and what was happening to me is not something I ever would have ordered up. And I'm going to tell you again, that was out of ignorance. Okay? I didn't understand. I had no life experience with this. I didn't know anybody. I'd seen Marley Matlin film, whatever that was. I saw that film. That was it. That was my experience with deafness. And here I'm presented with this kid, and he's profoundly deaf, and this is the single hardest thing I've had to experience and go through in sobriety. And I want you to know it was hard because of my ignorance and because of my reaction to it. And I say that because I just didn't know any better. So fast forward. Ryan grows up. He starts going to this deaf school that was in the area. We were living in Evanston, Illinois at the time. We sent him up to Highland Park to a deaf school. He was there for a few months. We pulled him out and put him in the local school in Evanston, the school he would have gone to had he not had any special needs. And this school, what an amazing thing. They just opened. They were just so welcoming to my son. There was a kindergarten teacher there, and that kindergarten teacher just so happened to teach every one of his classes how to sign. How about that? And it just happened that way. And then all of a sudden, we said, we wanted our son to go here. And he says, I want him. Let me have him in my class. And I thought, I just had no idea that was going to happen. And then this school was just very welcoming. Fast forward, fifth grade. The end of fifth grade, the schools in Evanston go from kindergarten to fifth, right? And this grammar school had a graduation. Can you believe that? I didn't know grammar schools had graduation. Is that news to anybody else? Like, what? Yeah, we're going to graduate. And then, okay. And a couple weeks before the graduation, the principal came up to Ryan's mom and I and said, I don't know if Ryan's willing to do this. I had this idea. I just wanted to come to you guys first and see what you thought about it. He said, the way this graduation is going to go is that I'm going to stand up there. I'm going to introduce each of the fifth graders to come up and get their diploma. And he said, here's my idea. How about if Ryan's willing to have them come up on stage and fingerspell their names as they get announced? And I was like, wow. And we presented to Ryan. He's like, yeah, sure. So here's graduation night. It's an auditorium, about as many seats as here, packed with parents. The kids are kind of around or whatever. And then the principal comes up behind the lectern, and he said, okay, we're going to do the graduation now, but I want to call up Ryan L. So I'm just keep him anonymous here. Ryan L., come on up. He said, 6 years ago, Ryan came to our school, and Ryan has changed our school. He said he has had a profound effect on all the staff and all the kids here, and I just want to recognize him and ask him to sign these kids. I'm sitting out there, tough guy from Chicago, and I'm starting to, you know how we get, and I'm like, I'm going to hold this together. I gotta keep it together, man. I gotta keep it together. And then Ryan bounds up there, and he starts calling these kids' names, and Ryan's up there signing. And eventually it came to Ryan's turn, and he signed his name and walked across and went back. And I was out there. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. And then, because they didn't have a grammar school graduation where I went to school. But had they had such a graduation, the principal would have never said anything like that about me, right? He would have said, James, don't let the door hit you on the way out of here. But for my son, it's completely different, right? So the ceremony's over, and I'm out there, and I said, I got to get out of here. So I dashed home by myself because, I'm a guy, and I got to do all this in solitude. And I'm crying, and I'm off, and I hit my knees, and I say this prayer, and I want you to back up. I want to back up 12 years earlier, 11, when I found out my son was deaf. it wasn't a prayer, but my exclamation to God was, "Hey, why is this happening to me? What did I do to deserve this?" I'm ashamed to say it, but that's how I responded. Here it is. Ryan's 12, has this experience. I rush home overwhelmed with gratitude, and I hit my knees and I say, "God, what did I ever do to deserve this? You know, what did I ever do?" And my son is my hero. I had this idea that his life was going... What's that? So, I'm sorry, I thought you said something. I thought my son's life was going to be small. Kind of have this small little world where he would have this small little job or whatever. He graduated from Evanston High School, schooled about 4,000 kids. And he went to Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York. Studied civil engineering. And I remember I said to him, "Hey, kid, I'm good at math. You got need some homework help? You see Dad. Dad's here for you, buddy." After the first year, "Hey, Ben, I can't help you anymore, dude. You are on your own, you know. This is too hard." And so he was able to do something I wouldn't have been able to do. And, you know, I thought his world was going to be small. And that kid has traveled the world, man. I remember, this is a few years ago, I love to tell this story. He came up to me and he said, "Hey, Dad, I'm going to go travel in Indonesia for 3 weeks. And I said, "Cool." I said, "Who are you going with?" And he said, "Well, I was going to go with my girlfriend, but she can't go, so I'm going to go by myself." And I thought to myself, he was like 21, 22, I thought, I can hear just fine. And at the age of 22, there was no way I was going to go travel in Indonesia by myself. And here my deaf son is going to go. And I said, "I'll go." He's like, "Yeah, right." You know, I thought to myself, if I'm 21, the last person I would have wanted to travel with was my dad. And here I am, "Yeah, I'll travel with you. I'll go." And he's like, "Yeah, right." And a couple weeks later, he texted me and he said, "Hey, you still want to go?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Okay, meet me there, but don't stay very long." You know, so I think he realized, "Hey, man, if I travel for a few days with Dad, I'm going to eat good and stay somewhere other than a hostel." But anyway, so we traveled together in Indonesia, and it turned out to be one of the best trips of my life. And I love to tell this story, and I'm going to tell it. You know, he's traveled the world. He's been to South America and Asia and Europe and all over the U.S. And he knows how to travel. And I guess he looked online and found something. He said, "Dad, I got this idea of something to do." He said, "What I want us to do is fly over to this city called Luambajo, get on a boat, go rent this boat. And this boat will take us for 3 days hopping around these islands. And what do you say?" And I said, "Let's go, man. It sounds like a great idea." So we go down, we fly in, we go to the pier, and we don't know nothing. We talk to some dude. We rent this boat, and it's these just me and Ryan. That's it, and the crew, and this big boat, about as big as these two tables put together. And we're cruising around. We went to see all the Komodo dragons, all these really cool things. I'm like, "Man, this kid is cool. He's like, he knows how to do this." And I'll never forget this. It was this one night. I'm sitting on the deck of the boat, and there's kind of the piece that sort of comes out from the bow of the boat. What's that called? A prow or something? Anyway, and he's sitting on it. And the sun is setting. It's the most beautiful orange and red. I can see it right now. Orange and red colors of the sky and the islands. They're sort of mountainous. And his shadow is kind of silhouetted against what I was looking at. And he said to me, "Hey, Dad, this must be what heaven looks like." And when I could talk, I said, "You know, you might be right." And it wasn't too many years earlier, I thought my son's life was going to be small. And I want you to know I was wrong. I was so wrong. And when I was a newcomer to AA, I hated to be wrong. Anybody else hate being wrong? I hated it. I'm right. Even when it hurts, I'm right. And I want to tell you, when it comes to that, my son, I was wrong. Thank God I was wrong. And Dick has mentioned him this weekend. Keith Lewis was my sponsor for a while. And he once said to me, James, to the extent that you can be wrong is the extent you can be free. And I want you guys to know that my wisdom tonight, if there is such a thing, is the gift of being wrong. And I'm wrong all the time. I'm wrong. Ask Jane. I'm wrong all the time. And I love being wrong. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you again for letting me be here. And I'll turn it over to Ralph.
My name is Ralph White and I'm an alcoholic. And James is telling dad stories, and I have a soft spot for dad stories. And I got a soft spot for something else, too. I was surprised at how many people were still standing up with less than 30 days. So we were singing Christmas carols, and people were telling uplifting stories. And there's somebody sitting in here, probably in that group of people with less than 30 days, maybe feeling outside, inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We know something about you. Those of you who stood up in that group, in fact, those of you who stood up for less than a year, we know something about you. We know this has not been a good year for you. And it feel like it probably ain't going to be okay. But if you're sitting in this room with us tonight, you may not believe it, but we want to wish you a Merry Christmas. May feel like all I got to take home from this weekend is a book. Probably don't nobody want to see me coming. May not be any gifts under the tree for the kids. December 1985, I was in my first foray around this place. I come in August of 85. That December in 85, I was over my ex-wife's house. And I was putting together a bicycle Christmas Eve night. From a little girl on Christmas morning. And when I got through putting the bike together, my ex-wife said, "We're getting ready to go to bed. Let me see you out." And it felt like a knife going through my gut. Whenever she said, "This is my room," this is, I felt it. I just felt it. I felt it. Was new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Was hoping to get my old life back. Was hoping to sit and lay in the big bed again. Was hoping all that would happen. And that Christmas Eve, she said, "Let me show you to the door." And I caught the bus back to my mom's house. And my brothers were sitting on the front porch that December 24th of 1985. And they were drinking gin gimlets. And I said, "I think I'll have one." Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about me in lots of places. The insanity we talk about in the second step is parallel with my sound reasoning. We always run the insanely trivial idea. But I'm lonely. but I'm hurt, but I'm disappointed. But I won't be daddy on Christmas morning to open the gifts. And I started drinking that Tanqueray and Rose's lime juice. And thus started one more of those sprees that we are so familiar with. Our new friends that are sitting in here with us right before this Thanksgiving in 2019. How dark it is before the dawn. Sat in that seat. Listened to those songs. I never sat in that seat in here on a Christmas. We welcome you. And it doesn't look like it's a good place, and it doesn't look like it was a good beginning. Each and every one of us had a how dark it is before the dawn. Mine was October the 10th of 1986, and Grace came calling on October the 11th of 1986. And I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found some people. I was 33 years old. I had given up on life. There were no more Christmases. When you're in the life like I'm in the life, every day is the same. I was so deep in it, I thought they didn't celebrate Christmas anymore. Every day was the same day. I was one of those next year dads. On Christmases and on birthdays, I'd be thinking to myself, next year I'm going to get that girl something. And Grace came calling. And I haven't been the same since. And it didn't look like it from where I was starting. Didn't have a key to my mom's house. Didn't have a key to my house. Had lost my self-respect. Lost the power of choice. And was singing the happy songs up in here. And I listened to Joe, you know, when he was sharing the day. What seemed like a flimsy read. Because I know it's a guy sitting in here that was listening to O Come All Ye Faithful. And was listening to Deck the Halls. And was like, dude, this is where I landed? Because I'm not a Christmas carol guy in the street. That's not the guy. You know, when we talk about, Joe talked about it. Here are men and women worldly indeed. We don't sit around singing, oh, come all ye faithful. You know, we toasting them up and we hitting them back. You know, as a kid, and you guys have brought me back home. When I hear those songs, it takes me back because I wasn't always the guy toasting them up. There is something about this. You know, in the chapter we agnostic, it says deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of this power. And for some reason, I don't know why that is. I don't always believe it because Bill wrote it. But I don't think Bill had an x-ray. He could x-ray and see inside of every man, woman, and child. Why would you write that sentence, Bill? You know, and so, but I believe that there is something. Why is it that a guy 30 days ago who, if you turn your back on him, will be going in your purse. 30 days later, he's sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's saying, he goes back to the gas station and said, you gave me too much change. Little stuff at first. What happened to that guy? What happened to the guy who was going in the purse 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous? He's going around and he's picking up cups and he's picking up ashtrays and he's pouring coffee. And he's showing you to your seat. What is that? And it feels natural. It feels comfortable. It feels like coming home. Bill says this feeling is just as deep as the feeling that you have for an old friend. It feels like coming home. It feels like coming home. And I stepped into a room and I never thought my life would be the way it is right now. I never thought, you know, that I would have the opportunity, you know, and we get the opportunity. I'm listening to James share about his son. Somebody out there, and it's two ways to look at when you're at a meeting, everybody's hearing something different in a meeting, right? And when you're on this side, you know, you reveling for James and you happy for James and you like, damn, I remember walking my daughter down the aisle. I remember the feeling that I got as a father walking her down. I remember the feeling I got as a father showing them their, you know, giving them driving lessons, both my girls in their first car. I remember the feeling I got as a dad when I was moving them into their first grade. I remember that. But there's somebody else sitting in here, one of you guys that stood up. And it's cutting you like a knife. It's cutting right now. Because my kids don't want to talk to me. My kids don't want to see me. Will I ever be able to have that? You listen to the stories that we tell in the rooms and you see men get up here. And it feels like, damn, can I ever have that? Been there. Been there. One day at a time. Started going to some meetings, man. Didn't know. Didn't know what was in front of me. You know, I did not come up. I always say it in my story. I didn't come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. You know, and that was me. You know, didn't know what was waiting on me. Didn't know that 33 years later, I'd be standing in light. Didn't know that I'd be standing in my own brand. You know, did not know. You know, and that's the thing, that's the promise that we hold out to you guys tonight. Those of you who stood up in here tonight, standing here, getting ready to enter your first sober Christmas. Maybe the kids won't be around the tree. Maybe there won't be a lot of gifts around the tree. Maybe the spouse or the loved one won't welcome you back. Maybe the parents still may not trust you. But I guarantee you, I guarantee you, I guarantee you, if you keep putting one foot in front of the other, if you put one hand in the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you put the other hand in the hand of this power that each of us has been introduced you to, I guarantee you'll never have to shake another one off. I don't know what life will look like for you, but I know it won't look like it looks tonight. We can give you a promise. Because these smiling faces up in here tonight, they weren't always smiling faces. Every single one of us had a how dark it is before the dawn. I like to talk about it, you know. And so for me, you know, what I started doing, I got a home group, you know. First thing I did was I got a sobriety date. You ain't got one, you don't have one. Get a date. Mark that spot. Howard P. used to say, whenever you know, when you get a God shot, when you get one of the moments when you can feel the grace, he said, mark that spot and go sit in that window again. You know, mark that spot. You know, so get a sobriety date. Then get a home group. Home group is something like a Cheers bar, somewhere you go where everybody know your name. Get a home group. Get a sponsor. You know, these days we put a lot of requirements on sponsors. Get a sponsor who has a sponsor, who has a working out. You know, we get a lot of interviewing requirements for sponsors. Just get a sponsor, you know. And I'm not making light of sponsorship, but there's power in the transaction. There's power in that conversation. There's power in, I don't know, help me. Because, dude, we see you. Grown-ass man, can't nobody tell me nothing. We know that's why you up in here with us right now. Get a sponsor and then do the damn thing. Man, I am be standing up here. I've been the baby of the bunch. I can remember being the baby coming around for the longest time. You know, I've known Dick a long, long time now. You know, and the key to being an old timer, you know, don't drink, don't die. You know, just don't drink and don't die. You know, and that's pretty much it. You know, and then people, every now and then, if you get in this deal and touch somebody, they'll touch you back. They'll touch you back. And I'm so grateful that you guys have been touching me for the last 33 years. And I'm hopeful that our new friends that are joining us tonight, we wish you a Merry Christmas. My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic.
stop but touch it in a couple seconds so it doesn't go slow.
I don't know if I can figure this out. Anyway, I'm no good. I'm technically challenged. Or you do it. Tell me when I'm done. Okay, because he's going to, I'm looking at it. My name's Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. I can't believe I'm the old timer. I cannot believe it. I'm with you, Ralph. Gotcha, sweetheart. I can't believe it. And I'm so excited to be doing this. I had a whole list of stuff I was going to talk about. And I wrote it all down thinking about it this afternoon. But you stood up and you talked about about Ryan, and I'm going to embellish on that. And you talked about sober Christmases. And so none of it is what I had down there. Everything hit me different. But one of the things that when James said, Ryan's my hero, I said, he's all our heroes in our family. He is amazing. He is an amazing kid who doesn't feel sorry for himself. And Ryan went to Evanston High School, 4,000 students, and he was the only deaf child. And not only was he deaf, an interpreter followed him around. So Ryan went to school every day. And me as an alcoholic, I'd wake up every day and say, I'm different. Woe is me. I'm so different. I feel different. Ryan suited up and showed up for school every day, and he was different. He was the only one, and he did it. An amazing kid. I also think that he probably wouldn't be the man he is, and I mean he is an amazing, successful civil engineer who builds bridges, if it had not been for his parents and the sacrifices that they made. So as a parent, I'm going to brag about my son because you're a gift. You're a gift. You're sober. You're a gift. Probably more of a gift to me today than ever, because of what's going on with Dave and the help that you and Jane give to me. But one of the things that happened is James is very, very active in AA. And he's very, very active in service in AA. And in Chicago, he was the chairman of the Special Needs Committee. And what happens in Chicago today is there's a big long list of people who sign for AA meetings because James had a deaf son. And there are people in AA today in Chicago that get deaf people that get the message carried to them because Ryan was deaf. And he knew that there was a need. The other thing is that I've had the privilege of sitting out and just coming to tears because somebody invited James to speak at a meeting where there was a lot of deaf people and there wasn't an interpreter for them to sign for James for the people who were deaf in the meeting. So not only does James speak in AA, he signs and speaks at the same time for the people who are deaf and has done that. And if those people that they call on that list for interpreters are not available, they call James. So James also interprets meetings for deaf people. That's a gift. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful I've got to be a part of that. I'm grateful I've got to see that. I'm grateful that that's my son. That's my son. A mother who could not take care of her kids. It's Christmas. What happens on Christmas? I get drunk. The kids think they're going to open their presents because we open our presents on Christmas Eve. But we're not going to open our presents because Mom's drunk and we can't open the presents. That's what happens to little alcoholic kids. And I, when you were talking about that, Ralph, that brought that to my mind. I remembered that. It's Christmas. We're celebrating Christmas. That wasn't always a happy time because there was a lot of drinking going on during Christmas. And that wasn't James's Christmases. That's the Christmases his kids have, but that's not the Christmases he had. The other thing is that I'm grateful for is my husband's here at this conference. We've been coming to this conference for a long time, and Dave hasn't been back since 2015, and he's here. And I came last year, but Dave didn't come in last year, and I had a caregiver for him that was staying with him while I could be here. And it did not turn out to be that pleasant of a weekend for me. I loved it, but it wasn't going well with the caregiver. And if you guys come to our condo, I will show you a hole about that big that Dave fell into the wall while I was here and put this big hole in the wall and fell a couple more times with the caregiver. And I didn't know if I'd ever be able to come back again. But Dave was here this weekend. He talked this weekend. And we got to share at this conference. And we've been coming since you started it. You and Barbara started. We missed the first one. That was the only one, was the first one. And never again would we ever plan anything on the first weekend of December, because we were coming to Woodstock South. And I'm so grateful that we get to be here this weekend, that Dave got to talk this weekend. And not only that, honey, you had the most sobriety. Oh my God, you had the most sobriety. And I never knew whether you'd make it to do something like that. I mean, it wasn't too promising for a few years. So that, I am just so grateful. And I just had this whole list of little things that I was talking, that I had down here, and how grateful I was for my sobriety, how grateful I was that you were healthy, and that we got to come, that, you know, maybe you're in a wheelchair, and I know you don't like that, but we're able to get around and do it. And I'm grateful that I have sponsees. And one of the things that happens, and that we all know, and those people who stood up that were new that Ralph was talking about, you get something going on in your life, and the times get tough. And I'm telling you, when the first time Dave had his open heart surgery, and that was in 2003, I remember this old man in our group in Bellingham. And he at that time had about 55 years. And he said, we were all sitting in the waiting room while they were operating on Dave. And he says, you just take a bunch of alcoholics and something starts happening and we just circle the wagons. That's what we do. We just circle the wagons. So if you're new here, I'm here to tell you, you may, and I loved what Ralph said, it's Christmas, and your heart may be just aching, and you're dying in pain because, you know, there was just a few days. So, you know, I don't know about you, maybe your life was going great. But I tell you, when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life was not going great. My family was in shambles. My children were affected. And because of this program, that's not happening. And I just want you to know that you have entered a place where that whenever you need anything, we circle the wagons. We just circle the wagons, and we're here for you. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you. And I have been able to experience that in spades. I've been absolutely able to experience what it's like to have people help you when the chips are down. I've watched people help other people when the chips are down. We circle the wagons. I just want to say Merry Christmas. I'm glad you're here. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever. Happy holidays. I'm just glad you're here at Woodstock South and you get to experience what I like to consider this conference as a love fest. I just feel like that's what you and Barbara were striving for, would be a family conference and everybody would come here and celebrate. And Dick and Barbara, you have done it. You have absolutely done it. You have filled my heart. I get my family here this weekend, and that we get to celebrate like that. There's just nothing better. God bless you.